We're talking about new developments in HIV/AIDS research here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Researchers announced this month that for the second time in history, a man has been cured of HIV. Is this a breakthrough? About 1.1 million Americans have the virus, and about 1 million people are in danger of getting it. Is HIV an issue in your community? How does it affect you and your loved ones? We're at 800-642-1234. David O'Connor is a pathology and laboratory medicine professor at the UW-Madison. His lab looks at viral infections impacting human health, and he's on a year-long sabbatical at the Peter Doherty Institute for Infection and Immunity in Melbourne, Australia. Dave, welcome to the Ideas Network. Are you there, Dave? Dave, can you hear us? We're having a little bit of technical difficulties as we look at HIV/AIDS and the developments on the horizon. About 1.1 million Americans have the virus, and about 1 million people are in danger of giving it. Dave, are you there? We still can't hear Dave as we take a look at HIV and AIDS. And we're trying to get him who he is in Melbourne, Australia. He heads the O'Connor Lab at the university, which looks at viral infections that impact human health. Are you living with HIV? What is life like for you in your treatments? Maybe you don't have HIV, but you're taking a preventative medication to avoid it. Why did you decide to do that? We're at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And so what are your thoughts on the new cure that we have seen this month come out, the London patient? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Dave, are you with us? Can you hear us, Dave? I don't think we quite have Dave yet, and I think we're trying to get him on the phone here. We are talking about HIV/AIDS here on The Morning Show and looking for your insights. Are you living with HIV? What has your treatment protocol been like? And what about the cost of treatments, the access? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. When you learned about the London patient and a cure, did you find hope in this? Are you concerned about the future of HIV/AIDS and the impact it has here in the U.S. and around the world? You can join in at 800-642-1234. I think we're getting Dave O'Connor here on the phone. He is a pathology and laboratory medicine professor at UW-Madison. Dave, are you there?
I am.
Great. Sorry about that, unable to get you there. But first of all, can you help us understand HIV is a virus and AIDS is a condition caused by HIV. Can you help us understand the difference a little bit better, the interconnectedness there?
Sure. So if you go back to the 1980s, these two terms were often used interchangeably after we discovered that the HIV virus led to the development of AIDS, this condition where the immune system breaks down. The HIV virus infects and destroys T cells, which is a type of cell in the immune system that's important for quarterbacking the immune response to other types of pathogens or things that could make us sick. And over the last 20 years, we've come up with really good treatments that suppress the ability of the virus to infect these cells, and when you suppress the ability of the virus to infect cells, you get healthier. And so fortunately, today, there's about 20 million people around the world who are receiving effective treatment for HIV, and these people will typically have a normal life expectancy and will never develop AIDS.
We're going to get into the treatment protocols in a moment, but how do you get HIV and how common is it?
Well, in the state of Wisconsin, about 75% of new HIV infections are among men who have sex with men. Injecting drug users are another population in Wisconsin who are a focus for prevention efforts. So it's important to note that in a state like Wisconsin, we're actually on the low end of new HIV cases, with only about 250 new cases each year.
So is it improving as you look at the trend lines on the number of cases here in Wisconsin and across the U.S.?
Well, the number of cases has remained stubborn and about the same over the last decade. But what has dramatically changed is the outcomes for people who find out that they're HIV positive. The drug treatments today are heaps better than they were even 5 or 10 years ago. They're easier to take, and people enjoy much better, longer, healthier lives than they used to.
Last week, it was announced that a man has been in remission from HIV for a year and a half, and he wants to remain anonymous, so researchers are calling him the London patient. What do we know about this case?
Sure. So about 20 years ago, researchers discovered that there is a special type of protein on the surface of cells called CCR5, and this is sort of a lock that the virus needs to pick to infect most cells. And people who lack this CCR5 protein really can't get infected with HIV. And there's a small number of people who naturally lack this CCR5 protein. So about 10 years ago, researchers who needed to perform a bone marrow transplant on someone who had both HIV and a life-threatening form of cancer did a bone marrow transplant on someone, Timothy Ray Brown, who used to be known as the Berlin patient, but they did something quite clever. They used cells that from a donor who was naturally lacking these CCR5 proteins. And after the bone marrow transplant took, the Timothy Ray Brown's immune system was now repopulated with these cells that lacked this protein, and the virus didn't have anywhere to go. And he was the first case of someone who had gone into long-term HIV remission. And then last week, it was announced that a similar sort of transplant, again in someone who had cancer and HIV, again with a donor who was lacking this protein on the surface of their cells, the CCR5 protein, had a similar sort of outcome where after the bone marrow transplant, his cancer went into remission. Then he interrupted his HIV treatment, and the HIV seemed to be in remission too. These are unusual cases.
These are unusual cases. And should we be calling these cases a cure? I mean, a bone marrow transplant is pretty extreme, and it wouldn't be perhaps a normal treatment protocol.
Oh, not at all. So this is really not generally applicable to most people who have HIV who are treated with drugs that are now quite good. This is really a very specialized case where you have someone who has both a life-threatening cancer and HIV and who really needs a bone marrow transplant to have the opportunity to potentially survive the cancer that they have. Even in places that are world-renowned for doing these bone marrow transplants, like Memorial Sloan Kettering, there's only about a 75% of people who get these transplants survive for more than 1 year.
We're talking about what needs to be done to end the HIV/AIDS epidemic and to cures that have attracted attention. David O'Connor is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at UW-Madison. You have a line at 800-642-1234. Are you living with HIV? Let's talk about it. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to end the HIV/AIDS epidemic. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Trump's 2020 budget seeks an extra $291 million to stop the spread of HIV. The president announced his goal in the State of the Union last month.
My budget will ask Democrats and Republicans to make the needed commitment to eliminate the HIV epidemic in the United States within 10 years. We have made incredible strides, incredible.
A big part of the White House strategy is getting people into treatment quickly. We're looking at breakthroughs and how to control the spread of HIV. How does HIV affect you or a loved one? What are the biggest barriers to care? Is it cost or access? Where do you hope to see HIV research in the next several years? Join in at 800-642-1234. UW-Madison pathologist Dave O'Connor stays with us, and his lab focuses on viral infections in humans. So, Dave, aside from the two patients who are said to be cured, and we looked at that treatment, how effective are we currently when treating HIV?
Well, the treatments are now very good. Most people in the U.S. can take one pill once a day and can expect to have a relatively normal life expectancy with fairly few side effects. In fact, the same drugs that most people take to treat HIV can also be taken by people who are at high risk of becoming infected to prevent themselves from getting HIV in much the same way as a woman would take a hormonal birth control pill.
But we've also, as we've seen these strides, there have been cost issues. There is this once-a-day pill, but it sells for more than $1,600 a month, and until recently wasn't covered by insurance companies. What do we know there?
Well, in terms of using it as a prevention, there's a variety of ways that people can access it. It is now covered through Badger Care Plus. Patients who have private insurance can get it through private insurance, and the companies that make these drugs also have access programs for those who neither have private insurance and don't qualify for federal support.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Marcus joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Marcus. Are you there, Marcus? We're seeming to have trouble here getting Marcus. What else do we know? Who is most at risk of contracting HIV? What do we know about college students and other at-risk populations?
Well, again, in the state of Wisconsin, the 75% of infections are new infections are occurring in men who have sex with men. And within this population, ethnic minorities are at particular risk. So more than 60% of new infections in Wisconsin are among racial and ethnic minorities, even though these populations comprise less than 20% of Wisconsin's population.
So let's say a father and a mother both have HIV, but they're taking medication for it. They conceive, give birth to a child that is HIV-free. How likely is that scenario to take place today?
Well, fortunately, there's been great strides at preventing the transmission of HIV during birth and after birth. Women can now take antiretroviral drugs or these HIV drugs while they're pregnant and while they're breastfeeding, or they could opt to use formula feeding, so that the transmission of HIV to babies in the U.S. Is really rare right now, though this is still a major route of transmission worldwide in places where some of these advances aren't as widely available as they are here.
Let's try Marcus again in Milwaukee. Marcus, are you there?
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
So my question for David is, I've heard that European population has 10% approximate natural immunity to HIV/AIDS, and I was just wondering if you could possibly give me some reasons as to the what's the cause and effect there.
Are there immunities?
Yeah. So again, there is a small fraction of Northern Europeans who don't have this LOC protein, the CCR5 protein, on the surface of their cells, and people who naturally don't have this protein seem to be otherwise healthy, but they are resistant to acquiring HIV, especially if they get if they don't have a copy of this protein on the DNA that they get from both of their parents. People who are what we call homozygous or who don't have any of the CCR5 protein are very, very rarely infected with HIV. Though there are some types of HIV that can bypass this particular CCR5 protein and use other proteins to get access to cells. So it's not a perfect resistance, but if you have this, your risk of getting HIV is dramatically reduced.
Can researchers take anything from this very small population and apply it in their research labs to make it more universal among other people?
Yeah, there's lots of work trying to do that at UW-Madison and elsewhere, engineering stem cells that lack these proteins and then coming up with ways that they can be delivered to mimic the sort of effect that we see in the Berlin and London patients without the potential toxicity of a bone marrow transplant.
Yeah, and taking the cases of the Berlin and London patients, so what do HIV/AIDS researchers do next to end this epidemic and figure out how to, as President Trump would say, have an end to all cases but in the next decade?
Well, I think that these cases shouldn't be confused with the strides that are going to end the epidemic. So we have a toolkit that we can now use to prevent and treat HIV, and this involves medical circumcision of men, which reduces men's risk of getting HIV by more than 50%. If people are successfully treated with these antiretroviral drugs, they are not going to transmit the virus to their partners. For some people where they're at high risk, taking these drugs prophylactically or like birth control pills will reduce their risk of becoming infected. You put all of these things together with the old-fashioned tools that we've known about for a long time, wearing condoms correctly and reliably, being careful about your partners and being educated about how HIV is transmitted. And, you know, you put all these things together and you can see a path that's going to lead to no infections at some point in the future. So, for example, in the UK, the number of men who have sex with men who are getting HIV has, you know, plummeted by more than 50% in 1 year by adopting all of these different technologies, you know, as they are appropriate for individual people and their individual circumstances.
And perhaps public health and getting the word out about how to stop the spread is one of the big things in trying to find an end to this?
Yeah, that's a great point. So there's always been a big stigma around HIV, and that has led a lot of people who are at risk to not seek out medical care if they're at risk or if they think they might be infected. But I would urge anyone who thinks that they may have had risky exposures that could lead to HIV to go in and get tested, because if you get tested and if you have HIV, the treatments now will give you a normal life expectancy. Those same treatments will prevent you from transmitting the virus to your partners. And the sooner you get on treatment after you're infected, the better your prognosis is going to be. The longer you're going to be able to live, the healthier you're going to remain. And so there really is a need to push early diagnosis and early treatment.
Do you find that there, and this is outside the realm of research, but do you still see the stigma and discrimination in HIV?
It's certainly there. I think it varies based on where you are. There's a lot of people now who don't feel like they know anyone who has HIV, and certainly you don't see as much of a vivid epidemic as we did before the drugs were widely available. And as you mentioned at the start, I'm in Melbourne, Australia for the year. And here you see advertisements on the streets, you see on the front doors of pharmacies, stickers that say PrEP is here. PrEP is the name for this pre-exposure prophylaxis, where you take HIV drugs as birth control. And here you see advertisements where they say, you know, if you're at risk, come in and let's learn a little bit more about it and see if it's right for you. And I think that that speaks to how the stigma has been reduced, at least in some places, over the years.
Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
David O'Connor is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at UW-Madison, and his lab looks at viral infections that impact human health. We caught up with him on sabbatical at the Peter Doherty Institute for Infection and Immunity in Melbourne, Australia. Coming up, we head to the 6th Annual Summit for Young Black Men in Milwaukee. News is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.